I said, we are going to be speaking about Samson. And I think most Christians, and even people that don't affiliate with Christianity or don't really go to church or haven't really went to church ever, most people know the story about this strong guy from the Bible, Samson. Now, there's two disclaimers I seem to prepare you for before I get into my message. Samson is Simson in Afrikaans, and it translates easier to Simon in English, so I might be referring to Samson a few times as Simon. I will be meaning Samson. What's the other thing? Oh, yeah. The Nazarites. Now, translating it from Afrikaans, it's a Nazarene, which translates to Nazarene, which is people from Nazareth and not the Nazarites. So when I'm referring to the Nazarenes, I'm meaning Nazarites. So hopefully I'll get it right as you get there. So anyway, bear with me. I was speaking about Simon, I mean Samson. So, we know the story about Samson. And I remember from my children's Bible, there was a strong guy with a picture pretty much like this one, but it was hand-drawn with Samson pushing against the pillars. And I just remember all the muscles that was drawn onto this guy. And he might be one of the most impressive faith heroes in the Bible. I mean, there's this story of David that killed a giant, Goliath. But Samson, even though he wasn't a giant by length, he was pretty much the Israelites' very own giant. Because he killed many more Philistines than what Goliath ever killed Israelites. So he's this very impressive, hulky type of guy. And he was part of a group amongst the Israelites that were known for being especially devoted to God. They were consecrated to God. The group called the Nazarites. And Samson was one of them. And they were really a holy group of people. One of the Bible commentaries said that of Simon, it is said the most of any individual, and then the Spirit of the Lord came upon him or was upon him. According to the commentaries, there's not another person in the Old Testament of whom there is said so many times, then the Spirit of the Lord came upon him or was upon him. So he was this really consecrated guy, very devout to God. And he was also pretty clever. This one time he had this idea to tie the tails of 300 foxes together, two, and then tie a burning torch to them, and then he chased them into the vineyards of the Philistines, into their olive orchards, into their wheat fields. So he wreaked havoc. It was kind of like a genius plan. So he was a strong guy, but he was also this very wise guy. And he was so strong that on one particular day, he picked up the jawbone of a donkey and he killed 1,000 Philistines by hitting them with this jawbone. So he was a strong guy, but this wise guy. And from his birth, Samson was consecrated to be the leader of Israel at some time. And he was set apart to break the power of the Philistines over the people of Israel. And everything that he did and everything that was done for him since his birth worked together for him to be considered and consecrated as a Nazarene. Now the word Nazarene comes from the Hebrew word Nazir, which means consecrated or separated. And this is a vow that somebody would make to abstain from all wine and anything else from grapes. Like, they won't even drink grape juice. They would refrain from cutting their hair on the head. They would still have their facial hair. They would refrain from becoming ritually impure by having contact, for instance, with corpses or graves, even when close families had died. So all the Jewish people, at some stages, became unholy or impure, and then there was a rite there to go through. Sometimes it was a week thing, sometimes it was a day thing, sometimes it was just a ritual washing, and then they would be considered to be holy again. For the Nazarites, they weren't allowed to do any of these things that will make them unholy for any time. So Samson had this hairy face, this long hair, and for every Israelite walking past him, this would have been the symbol that this guy has been consecrated to serve God in a special way. Just by seeing him walk in the street, you would notice this. Oh, there's a Nazarite. Oh, he's really devoted to God. And he was a great leader for the people of Israel. He led Israel for 20 years. And this didn't really happen that often. A lot of times it was 6 years, 7 years, maybe 12 years. But there wasn't a lot of leaders that led the nation of Israel for 20 years. So he sounds quite impressive. But as impressive as he was, and as strong as he physically was, he had this bad habit of easily falling for temptations that came along his way. This very devoted man to God, this strong, wise man, this Nazarite, had this bad habit of easily falling for temptations along the way. And he has this wandering eye for heathen girls and Philistine girls and prostitutes. And in the short bit that we do have, the narrative of Samson in the Old Testament in Judges, it's just 3 chapters we have about the story of Samson. This is actually a big theme, this wandering eye that he had for all these ungodly ladies. And it was exactly one of these girls that caught him with all his sly tactics and that had him caught in the end, that led to his demise. And if we read the narrative about Samson, those 3 chapters, if you start reading through it, there's kind of like this inner voice telling you, you know what, as you go through it, you know what, at some stage all of these things is going to get the best of it. You cannot play with fire that much and not get burned. And then you got burned. And Samson is one of the faith heroes, actually the few faith heroes, that really played around on the fringes of sin, that wasn't so quickly judged by God. When he was tiptoeing around sin and playing with sin and playing with temptations and seeing how close he can get to it and falling for it, he was one of the very few faith heroes in the Bible that weren't judged quickly by God. The closest we have, I think, to this might be David, when with the old thing with Bathsheba. But it wasn't a continual thing, it was just this one-time thing with Bathsheba. But then still God judged David, and still God reprimanded him. But it seems like God was especially patient with Samson. It seems like God pretty much worked with Samson more in the way that he usually works with us. Very patiently, even though we are trying to move the boundaries closer and closer to temptation. But there did come a time when all these playing with fire, playing with temptation, caught up with him. And then we're going to read about that in Judges 16. Now, it's quite a long piece, so I took some verses out. It's still quite long, but we're going to read verses 1 to 5 and then 17 to 30. Judges 16, verses 1 to 5, and then 17 to 30. One day, Samson went to Gaza, where he saw a prostitute. He went in to spend the night with her. The people of Gaza were told, "Samson is here." So they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the city gate. They made no move during the night, saying, "At dawn we will kill him." But Samson lay there only until the middle of the night. Then he got up and took hold of the doors of the city gate, together with the two posts, and tore them loose, bar and all. He lifted them to his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that faces Hebron. Sometime later, he fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. The rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, "See if you can lure him into showing you the secret of his great strength and how we can overpower him so we may tie him up and subdue him. Each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver." Then on to verse 17. So he told her everything. "No razor has ever been used on my head," he said, "because I have been a Nazarite dedicated to God from my mother's womb. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I would become as weak as any other man." When Delilah saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines, "Come back once more. He has told me everything." So the rulers of the Philistines returned with the silver in their hands. After putting him to sleep on her lap, she called for someone to shave off the 7 braids of his hair, and so began to subdue him. And his strength left him. Then she called, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He awoke from his sleep and thought, "I'll go out as before and shake myself free." But he did not know that the Lord had left him. Then the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, and took him down to Gaza. Binding him with bronze shackles, they set him to grinding grain in the prison. But the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. Now the rulers of the Philistines assembled to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to celebrate, saying, "Our God has delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hands." When the people saw him, they praised their god, saying, "Our God has delivered our enemy into our hands, one who laid waste our land and multiplied our slaves." While they were in high spirits, they shouted, "Bring out Samson to entertain us." So they called Samson out of prison, and he performed for them. When they stood him among the pillars, Samson said to the servant who held his hand, "Put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple, so that I may lean against it." Now the temple was crowded with men and women. All the rulers of the Philistines were there, and on the roof were about 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. Then Samson prayed to the Lord, "Sovereign Lord, remember me. Please, God, strengthen me just once more, and let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my 2 eyes." Then Samson reached toward the 2 central pillars on which the temple stood. Bracing himself against them, his right hand on the one and his left hand on the other, Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." Then he pushed with all his might, and down came the temple on the rulers and all the people in it. Thus he killed many more when he died than when he lived. Back to verse 21. Then the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, and took him down to Gaza. Binding him with bronze shackles and setting to grinding grain in the prison. But the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. You see, Samson's hair growing back was a visual sign that God's favor was once again resting on Simon. And it was actually a visual sign of his earlier strength. You see, the thing with the Nazarite was that in anyone's stage, if they would decide that they didn't want to be a Nazarite anymore, call it leave the order, kind of like a monastery or like a monk's retreat, so call it something like that. So if at any time he says, "I want to leave the order, I don't want to be a Nazarite anymore," then you would be able to do that as a Nazarite. And you would continue to then just be a very ordinary, even though still God-fearing, good Jew, would lead a normal, holy, Jewish life. So if you would say, I don't want to be a Nazarite anymore, it doesn't mean that you are leaving the faith of the Jews. It's just you are just leaving the order of the Nazarites. And you can continue being a very, very good and holy Jew after leaving, stop being a Nazarite. Kind of like a monk leaving the monastery, still staying Christian. So in no way does it mean that you are abdicating your faith. It just means that as a Nazarite or ex-Nazarite, you just chose a different way of living out your faith. And the Nazarite oath in Numbers 6, so this is where it comes from, Numbers 6 in the Old Testament. The Nazarite oath actually makes provision for this. The Nazarite oath speaks of a time for which somebody would consecrate themselves in this way. So, for the most part, it'll be a timely thing for most Nazarites. But then for Samson, it was from birth, or actually before he was born. So you do get those Nazarites as well. But for many, it's just a seasonal thing. But should a Nazarite decide to leave the order, to not be a Nazarite anymore, and then after a while decide that he would want to take this oath again, that he wants to be once again consecrated to God, especially devoted to God in this specific way for another season or for the rest of his life, then he could join again or take the oath again and become a Nazarite again. So when somebody would take the Nazarite oath again, it will be the same as anyone taking it for the first time. Now you would let your hair grow. You would start growing your hair now on your beard, and now you start following all the rules and the guidelines for the Nazarite oath. Just like somebody that did it now for the first time. You would do the same on your second go or third go. And then you would be considered to be a Nazarite once again from that moment on. Until the season is over or for the rest of your life. Depends on how long you make this oath for. To Samson's hair started growing. And this was a visual sign that God's favor was once again resting on Samson. A visual sign that once again he was devoted to God in a special way. Even there in jail, in the prison, blind, humiliated. After he has done all these dumb things, for wise guy, he did really dumb things. After doing all these dumb things, here in the prison, he became once again devoted to God in a special way. And he let his hair grow again. So he was consecrated again in this way to serve God. And here is the beautiful thing. And his hair started to grow again. God started to walk this journey with him again after him being unfaithful this morning. And sometimes we miss this part of the story of Samson. We just think about the strong guy. We miss this very beautiful part in the Samson narrative about God starting to walk the journey again with someone after a season of being disloyal and unfaithful to God. And God will make us useful again. God makes Samson useful again. He brings him back onto the road that he was traveling on before. And that's the way God does with us. He brings us back to the road that he has planned for us. He takes our hands once again and continues the journey with us. Unfortunately, in our relationship with God, we also have these times of being faithful and especially devoted to God, being loyal, and then being unfaithful and disloyal on the other hand. But being faithful and unfaithful isn't the only two root markers on our journey with God. On our journey with God, there are times in between faithful and unfaithful. There are extra route markers for being extremely faithful, being a little less faithful, being only just faithful. But then on the other end of the continuum lies unfaithful. So we've got extremely faithful and unfaithful with everything in between. This is not the only two options. But this is the extreme. But there's so many variables between being extremely faithful, totally faithful to God, and unfaithful. It's on a continuum that all of this lies. And unfortunately, this is the place where too many Christians find themselves. It would have been ideal if we found ourselves most of the time between extremely faithful and faithful. If we were moving between those two route markers. Yeah, I'm being faithful to God, but I'm really being faithful to God. If we moved between those two markers, that would have been super cool. With every now and then backsliding into a little less faithful. But unfortunately, we move between faithful all the way to unfaithful more often than any one of us really want to acknowledge. And we catch ourselves too many times that we are on this end of this continuum, as unfaithful. And I don't even think it's necessary for me to describe being unfaithful to God to you. Because I will bet my last dollar that every one of us, every last one of us watching this and sitting here, know what unfaithful to God means. So I don't even need to use examples. I don't even need to describe it. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And I guess you understand what I mean when I speak about this continuum, being unfaithful and faithful. Because as much as each one of us know exactly what it means to be unfaithful to God, I think all of us know exactly what it means to be faithful to God. Otherwise, you wouldn't call yourself Christian if you've never been faithful to God. If you've never been extremely faithful to God for a season. So we know these two extremes. But unfortunately, we catch ourselves way too often being unfaithful to God. Being like Samson, trying to see how far we can play close to the edge of temptation. How close we can just push this before we fall into sin. Then God keeps on being patient with us. And we catch ourselves way too often being unfaithful to God. But then his hair began to grow again. You see, God is always prepared and willing and longing to start the journey with us again after a season of being unfaithful. God is always willing and longing to use us again
He is always willing and longing to bring us back onto the road that He has marked out for us, the road that He has planned. He's always willing and longing to take our hand again and continue the journey with us. Even if we have to continue the journey now with a lot of scars that we accumulated while we were being unfaithful, even if we carry those scars, God still wants to continue this journey with us. Look at Samson. His eyes have been gouged out. He has been humiliated. With all his scars, God says, I want to use you again. I want to continue this journey with you again. And a lot of times we think about our scars, the scars that we got in our lives. Some not by our own fault, many by our own fault and by our own choices. Many of these scars we get with in a season away from God, in a season of being unfaithful to God. So we look at our scars and then we think, oh, but you know, I don't fit into God's plans anymore. Just look at me. Look at where I was. And looking at my scars, everybody can see where I was. I don't think God wants to continue this journey with me anymore after I've been unfaithful. I don't think God wants to continue this journey with me because I've got a criminal record. Because there's a whole wreckage, a whole line of wreckages left behind me. Broken relationships that I've caused or that I've partly caused. I've wrecked so many things. Just look at all the things in my way. I don't think God wants to continue this journey with me. There's so many burned bridges behind me. I actually don't want to look back at all the carnage behind me. Things that I've caused. Even with all of that, your hair can still grow again. You know, I'm not talking about these mold bags. Your hair can still grow again. So stroke over your head. Stroke over your head. And feel if your hair is starting to grow again. Once again, not the mold bags. You know what I mean? Are your hair starting to grow again? Or is it time for you to start letting your hair grow again? Is it time for you to become devoted to God again? Is it now at the end of the season of being unfaithful for you? Or are you only now realizing that you are in a season of being unfaithful to God? Or are you just returning to God? Are they just growing back now? Regardless of where you find yourself on this continuum of being extremely faithful and not faithful at all, God wants to continue the journey with you. He longs to take your hand again and go down the road with you. He wants you to be devoted to Him again. He will let your hair grow back. He will use you again. If only you will give Him a chance. And for a lot of people, when COVID-19 started, this was something pretty much like this idea. A lot of people realized that they might have been unfaithful and far from God for a while. And a lot of people started being interested in God again. But I don't know how many followed through, and we are getting used to things now with COVID-19. And I'm not sure how many people are following through with their renewed interest, their renewed passion in Jesus. Maybe their hair almost started growing again and then they shaved it off again. So how about you take some time now, I'll give you a few seconds. Take some time now and figure out where you are on the journey with God. Between faithful and unfaithful. And ask yourself if your hair is starting to grow again, or if it's time to start growing your hair. Regardless of all the scars, regardless of all the carnage behind us, God wants to keep us back on the road. God wants to take our hands and continue the journey with us. So let's take some time and then ask yourself this honest question. Where do you find yourself on this journey? And then I will conclude for us with a prayer.